All right, North-South Connection fans, this is Chad Campbell with episode number 5 of Carolina Dreamin'. Before we get into our matches today, let's do a bit of housekeeping for this series as a whole. I know I've talked previously in that I thought the series would continue beyond the due date of the PTBN Greatest WCW Match Ever Project list, but I've had a couple of people reach out to me and say they've been using this series is kind of like a roadmap for what they need to watch. They don't know how much time they'll have to watch the other stuff, so they're kind of using me strictly as their recommendation base. And taking that into consideration, I've determined that I'm going to try to complete this series by December 31st. I've done some quick math, and it looks like we would have to do about 2 episodes per year for the remainder, as I'm only going through 1994. I can probably do maybe a quick blip on 1995 and just give some recommendations on that, or I might could do a quick episode. So we may be catching up a little bit towards the end of the year and have to do some bonus episodes, but I think that should play out nicely if we do on average about 2 new episodes per year. That should complete the project in a whole. And then a new thing I'm going to do is I'm going to list every match I watched for the show and give my star ratings for all the matches, just so you have a comprehensive list there. Now, saying all that, there's also one more tiny caveat. So when we finish our show today, we will be at the end of 1985. 1986 is currently a year in wrestling I'm watching comprehensively, just based on Jim Crockett Productions, JCP. It's a great year. There's a ton of great TV matches. There's some hidden gem stuff that the network has dropped between the Crockett Cup and the Great American Bash that's certainly worth watching. But because I'm watching that year comprehensively and chronologically, I don't want to kind of jump ahead in my timeline and go to the matches that were just called for this list and for this collection as candidates. So therefore, I will be skipping 1986. Again, I will provide a comprehensive list of matches that should be worthy, that should be watched. It'll probably be about 10 matches. And those are the ones that, you know, I kind of know off the top of my head. So I'll be doing that at the very top of next episode of Carolina Dreamin' in 2 weeks before we dive into 1987 proper. Saying all that, let's get into our matches today, which I don't know how long this show will be. It may be slightly shorter than some of the other ones, but that doesn't take away from the matches we watched today. This was probably my favorite series of matches I've watched for this project so far. And there's 3 matches we'll talk about today that no doubt will make my final list. And I don't know if that's happened so far. And there's also a couple of other matches we'll discuss that are great discussion points just within the promotion as a whole. So we can start things off right away with one of my favorite tag team matches of all time. It's Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, the Rock and Roll Express. And they're challenging for the NWA World Titles versus Ivan Koloff and Crusher Khrushchev. This took up a whole episode of Worldwide. The match emanated on July 9th, 1985. It aired on the July 13th, 1985 edition of Worldwide. It was the Rock and Roll Express's debut in the promotion coming in. And like I said, this is just one of my favorite tag matches of all time. Drew Wardlow and Ryan Everett did a great rundown of this match on Drew's latest podcast that he's doing his series on. Kind of it'll be a good compliment to what we're doing here, as he's going to be doing some kind of digest size episodes about the PTBN Greatest WCW list. That's on the PTBN Wrestling feed. Highly recommend you check that out. But this is just a match that I've watched a lot of times over the years. I think I first got it when I got a old good helmet 16 disc Rock and Roll Express compilation. Probably maybe 2010, 9, 10-ish, somewhere around that time. Watched this match for the first time, fell in love with it, and I just put it up there with the Clash 17, the DIY versus Revival Toronto matches as just one of the classical greatest examples of U.S. tag team wrestling and how it can be utilized in, I guess, Canada, since that match did happen in Canada, the DIY match. But just kind of what you consider North American sans lucha tag team wrestling, and probably more even honed in more geographically on quote-unquote Southern-style tag team wrestling. So this is a long match. Like I said, it took up the whole episode of Worldwide. It was given a big build. You get some pre-match stuff, some pageantry. David Crockett's ramped up. He says, can you believe we're going to be watching this match? You know, the match doesn't start about 7-8 minutes into the runtime of the video, which is they take a commercial break. So we're probably thinking about 11 or 12 minutes in. The match itself is 30 minutes long. A 30-minute long Crusher Khrushchev match. Sounds horrid, to be honest. But I think of all the roles that Crusher Khrushchev, Repo Man, Smash has utilized, Barry Darso has utilized throughout his career, this run is his peak. This 1985, early 1986 run, because he kind of knows his role. Ivan is the clear leader of the group. He's the, you know, headmaster leading his charges. Nikita is the dangerous power person of the group. And Crusher is just kind of the bruiser. He does a lot of the grunt work. He's the gopher, so to speak. And he plays that role really well. And I talked about in the last episode the Nikita Koloff-Ric Flair match from Charlotte in this football stadium that I wish was a great match but just didn't quite come together for me. Oddly enough, I did have a little discussion with Drew or Warlow previously mentioned about that match, and he said he really liked it. So again, that's another one I probably need to rewatch now that my expectations are calibrated for that match. But this one, just everything seems to come together for me, from the Russian versus Rock and Roll Express US dynamic to the work that's done inside the ring. So a very great shine sequence. The Rock and Roll Express is rolling. They're running around. They're using their speed to their advantage, showing that that's what they need to do to win the championship here tonight. And then it's just overall a great shine sequence. Really gets over again. This was their debut, so it really introduces them properly into the promotion and shows you what they're all about, and why they were highly sought out to come into JCP in the first place. Then we get to the heat of the match, and the heat of the match is centered around Robert Gibson and his arm being worked over. And it is a limit in how much you can do as a heel team on a control sequence, cutting the ring off, tagging in and out, and basically working over one appendage. Because I would say this heat segment on Robert Gibson goes, it's got to be over 10 minutes long. It may be closer to 15. There's a couple of hope sequences sprinkled in. But overall, it's longer than most tag matches. And this is why JCP, WCW, this type of wrestling really speaks to me. Because, honestly, the heat segment you see here is, and this is a match I pick on a lot, and it features Barry Darso, ironically, but the Demolition versus Hart Foundation match from SummerSlam 1990, I think that's a match that gets praised a lot unjustly, for my opinion. It's 2 out of 3 falls. Demolition keeps switching, and the referee's confused, even though none of the three look alike. That drives me crazy. And it's a 2 out of 3 fall match that goes about 15 minutes in total duration. And that's kind of, to me, in a lot of ways, WWF, WWE tag matches in a nutshell. There was some longer matches, don't get me wrong, in the 80s featuring the Killer Bees and the Hart Foundation and the Rougeaus and the Rockers. Some of those Rougeaus and Rockers matches I greatly enjoy. But a lot of the WWF, WWE matches that were featured prominently on television or on pay-per-view are very brief, are seen as non-factors. It's just not a promotion that really historically has valued tag team wrestling very prominently since 1982. They've done better in recent years with the New Day, of course, but in general, over the length of the history of the promotion, not been great to tag teams. I love tag team wrestling. And this is, again, this match shows the depths you're willing to take to get over the story. Because, one, it's Robert Gibson in the face and peril spot here. It's not Ricky Morton. You would tend to think, oh, if this match is a bona fide match of the year candidate for Chad, if this is one that he's praising really high on his list overall, this got to have a great Ricky Morton face and peril sequence. It doesn't. And I will say, Robert Gibson, this to me is his career match. I think he's incredible in this match. I actually think he's underrated slightly historically now, because probably by me myself. Like when I did my greatest 100 wrestlers in April, Robert Gibson wasn't on my list. He wasn't somebody I even considered. But as I'm watching more of this stuff, and there's a couple of singles matches involved, he's involved with as well. One that we might be talking about when we reach 1987 versus Tully Blanchard. I'm gaining a greater appreciation for him, where Ricky is still the best for sure. But Robert is right up there. He is not a shabby worker at all. It's not, to me, a Jim Neidhart, Bret Hart situation. I akin it more to Marty Jannetty, honestly, if you're wanting to look at kind of a historical comp for somebody. And he's spectacular in this match. Gets his arm just decimated, sells it all the way. Timing on his hope spots are impeccable. He finally makes the hot tag to Ricky Morton. It's a great hot tag. It's brief, all four are in, but again, it's like the Russians really only had one strategy. They were just going to grind and grind and grind the babyface U.S. tag team into submission just by the way they were going to decimate the arm. And eventually they thought that you would give up, but the Rock and Roll Express were not going to give up. Once they got the hot tag and were utilizing their speed, it was a great kind of contrast in the work that was done by the Russians of the arm work, where you saw that the Russians really couldn't keep up to the speed of the Rock and Roll Express. They were totally discombobulated, and it ends up with a great victory roll pin from Ricky Morton, pinning Ivan Koloff, which I don't think needs to get lost in the shuffle, to win the tag team titles. Huge pop, great moment, getting chill bumps talking about it, and then you get a great post-match celebration, and this is just a fantastic episode of TV. It's 45 minutes. It tells a complete story. You see the beginning with the hype going in. You see the aftermath with the celebration and then the perils of defeat from the Russians. 4.5 stars. Probably top 20 contender for me for the list overall. An amazing match. I love this match. I think there's some that really champion this match. Some may not like it quite as much as me and think the work is a little too long, a little too drawn out. But it's just a match I cherish. It's honestly one of my favorite matches of all time. I think it's a great match to watch on like the 4th of July or Memorial Day or Columbus Day, any of those sort of patriotic holidays. And right now, with the way the world is going, especially in the U.S., it's good to have some feel-good wrestling. It honestly is, and I think this match fits that. So if you're looking for something to watch, I'd recommend this one. Now let's turn our attention. Oh, this was a very interesting match. It's Ron Bass versus Tully Blanchard on World Championship Wrestling, which is, I think most people would consider that WCW Saturday Night, 605, from October 19, 1985. And I talked about in the last few episodes how the work that has been done on by Tully Blanchard, he is able to look vulnerable without it being overwhelming or for him to look weak. And this match, to me, I'm interested in other people watching this, because to me this match went over the line. I don't know if it's just because I have a perception of Outlaw Ron Bass as perennial WWF jobber in my head, so seeing him go toe-to-toe with the United States champion and really dominate him throughout the course of this match, whether that seems odd to me just based on the fact that it's Ron Bass, or if this was a case where they just gave the upstart babyface, in this case Ron Bass, way too much rope, way too much offense, and ended up hindering Tully overall. It's an interesting match to watch because, on one hand, I do think this puts over Ron Bass about as well as he's ever been presented that I've seen. The claw hold that he's able to catch Tully in throughout this match in different spots is the most effective I've ever seen the claw hold be utilized. But it's a 15-minute TV match, and Ron Bass has about 13 minutes of offense on it. And it's just weird that the United States champion is dominated that much. And then you get the finish, which is a very cheap finish, where Tully gets a little bit of offense. You think he's going to go into this control segment. Ron Bass takes over on offense right away. And Baby Doll just knows that it's inevitable that Tully's going to lose his United States championship. That he's not going to be able to run out the time limit. So she just gets in, does a real cheap DQ there, and then we get a big post-match brawl. Another interesting note from this match is that J.J. Dillon is out scouting, and he's with Black Bart, which they were in a feud, Black Bart, Ron Bass, and you see some great scouting tips from J.J. He's on commentary. He does a great job. But the key with this, and the thing that I found interesting about this is October 1985. As we start 1986, it's the very first episode of 1986, January 4th, on World Championship Wrestling, when J.J. says that, you know, he's let go of all his contracts with all his other wrestlers. He's going to be solely Tully Blanchard's manager, Tully Blanchard Enterprises. So this is kind of one of those interesting areas where what JJ was seeing here was the catalyst for what we see in 1986. Really the formation of the Four Horsemen. I mean, you're really seeing it now where Tully by this time is associated with them. But also still kind of separate, doing his thing with Baby Doll. So you're really seeing that come into play throughout this match. And it's just an interesting contrast. And then we can contrast that to our later two matches, our last two matches we'll talk about on this show from December 28th episode, where it's pretty much the Four Horsemen all together as one unit by that point in time, sans JJ, which again he joins them the next week when he joins Tully Blanchard. So this match was tough for me to rank because, again, I thought Ron Bass looked very strong. It's a great performance by Tully. I mean, he sells like hell for Ron Bass. It's just it seemed like it was too much of a dominating performance for Ron Bass for me. I ended up going 3.25 stars, 6.6 all the way out of 10 on that one. And now let's get into our final two matches, as previously mentioned. I talked about the Rock and Roll Express versus the Rushes being one of my favorite tag team matches of all time. This is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. It's the December 28, 1985 World Championship Wrestling TV show. It has two crackling matches on it. Magnum T.A. versus Ole Anderson and Ric Flair versus Ron Garvin. Our first look at Ron Garvin, a guy that I hope if this project does anything to help the reputation of one guy, it's Ron Garvin. I think the con discourse and conversation about him is turning finally for the better, as he was just seen so much as the goofy guy making goofy faces in the figure four, doing a terrible announce job at SummerSlam, and his WWF run really painted. I'd say Ron Garvin and Ken Patera, to me, their WWF runs really painted them in a more negative light than what they deserved. And maybe even Ron Garvin the most, because let's face it, once Ken Patera gets out of prison after the McDonald's incident, he's pretty well cooked. He's not a good, very good wrestler anymore like he was in the early 80s. But Ron Garvin has some great matches in his WWF run versus Greg Valentine for the most part. But it's kind of weird that, you know, if you just watch the matches with Garvin, they're very good, too great. I think it's just a matter of his personality didn't really gel with the WWF landscape at that time. He's not the best promo. He's never going to be an amazing promo, that's for sure. But to me, he does give believable promos, and he does have a connection. I think sometimes charisma and promo ability go hand in hand, and it really shouldn't be, because Ron Garvin has charisma. He has connection to this crowd. You see the way that the crowd really buys him winning this match as it progresses. So let's start with that match, because it's the first one that happened on the TV show. It's Ron Garvin versus Ric Flair. Ric Flair gives a great gloaty promo to start out. And this match starts out, and the sounds of this match, sometimes I've been known to watch wrestling with music or the sound down, or my wife's in the room watching a TV show, something else. This is a match you got to watch with the sound on. Because if you just hear the sounds of the chops, the thuds, the smacking when Ronnie Garvin goes out to the floor in the middle of the match, it smacks off the concrete floor. This is an amazing audible match where the chops are just vicious throughout this whole match. And the story that they tell of Garvin progressively gaining confidence, not backing down, Flair progressively getting more desperate, realizing the championship may suddenly be slipping away. It's beautiful. It's artistic. I mean, it's a 17-minute TV match packed in with a ton of hate, with a challenger that's looking confident while Flair is not looking weak. It caps 1985 for Ric Flair, maybe his greatest year of all time, of one of the three greatest wrestlers of all time. And what a way to go out on it this year. I mean, just a fantastic performance by Flair. He's vicious. He goes after Garvin on the floor. He has a lot of offense in the middle portion of this match. And the great thing is Garvin just doesn't back down. His facials, as he starts screaming, there's a primal emotional connection that you get drawn in as the viewer. Add on to that the chops. Add on to that David Crockett going nuts on commentary. Add on to that Tony Schiavone being a great straight man on commentary. And then you get a, on the surface, bullshit finish. But also a finish that works for me, where you have all the faces, heels, a ton of people run out onto the ring. You have all the Four Horsemen, Arn, Ole, Flair's out there. Dusty ends up getting into the ring. They do the knee drop onto his leg, revisiting them breaking his leg in September. Ron Garvin gets taken out, and they show some camera angles of him just wincing in pain on the floor. Just great visuals overall. And then finally, there's so many baby faces, they end up shooing the horsemen away. But I love this. I love this segment. I love this match. This is one me and Parv discovered when we were watching big stuff. The big boys play this and this whole show overall. And this is one of my favorite probably TV matches of all time, to be honest. It's up there. And just as far as if you think of WCW Saturday Night, you think of Raw, this one's up there. And I ended up going 4.25 here. 8.7 out of 10 will certainly make my list, probably knocking on the top half of my list. It'll be in contention, and this is just a match I love. To keep on with that show, the main event of that show, Magnum TA versus Ole Anderson for the U.S. Championship. Slightly lower on that match. I have it 4.25, 8.5, but that's actually raised from when I watched it last and just had it at a flat 4. And I think reading some of the Pro Wrestling Only discussion about that match helped, because this is another match that, if Flair and Garvin has the chops and the sounds, this is a match that has a lot of closed fighting. The first 12 to 13 minutes is strictly strikes. Magnum throws a drop kick at about the 13-minute mark of the match, which is the first wrestling move that he executes. And it's a match that's interesting. In the Techwood studio, everything feels confined. Everything feels really intense and tough, and it's like they can't get away from each other. I know on Pro Wrestling Only, it may have been Marty, I'm not sure, it may have been one of the other commentators, they likened it to a couple times they are fighting on the ropes and have to get broken up to an MMA cage match. It does feel like that. There is a great feeling of just deep hatred for each other, and neither man's backing down. I mean, Ole, say what you will about him as a human, but, you know, art imitates life. He's a bully. He is not going to back down. He's a bruiser. He shows that in this match. Magnum rising up the ranks here. Triumphant babyface again. Different from Ron Garvin, but no less effective. A little more showy, I guess, than Ron Garvin. But to me, he shows some great wrestling throughout this match. Some arm work, some brutal shots, some strikes. And then an awesome finish where Dusty comes out for Magnum's behalf. Arms out for Ole's behalf. You get kind of a quick distraction finish where the referee's tending to Arn and Dusty on the floor. Magnum's able to come in, roll up Ole, who was yelling down at the floor, to get the 1-2-3. Arn and Ole pitch a great fit in the ring. Dusty and Magnum celebrate as the show goes off the air, as 1985 goes off the air. I mean, you had some bullcrap with the Dusty finish and Starrcade, but they were able to get their heat back from that. I think that's one of those things. Like, I think historically you might think of that as a big gaffe, and maybe it is. But I think as a one isolated event, that was not a problem. It's just they kept going back to that well. They kept going back to that finish in subsequent years and subsequent periods, and that makes it worse looking back in retrospect. Because crowd, I mean, this is a small Techwood studio crowd, but they're with these guys. And as we go through our rundown of the rest of the matches, I can say there's one match in particular that I'll just talk about now. From December 28, 1985 edition of Worldwide, it's a six-man tag of Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson versus Magnum TA, Dusty Rhodes, Manny Fernandez. If you want to hear a hot JCP crowd, listen to that crowd. It is electric. David Crockett does some of his best commentating, like, you know, just, can you believe it? I defy anybody to find a wrestling promotion like this, you know, feeling like this, like the crowd is going nuts. Dusty and Flair start out that match, and it's electric. It's a great six-man tag, about 10 minutes of everybody just going after each other, flying through the air. Awesome, awesome. You know, too short to probably make a list like this, but I would like to see this match represented because the crowd heat is insane. So I went 3 3/4, 7.4 for that. I watched two other matches for the show. One was from July 21st, 1985, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson versus Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA. That was from a house show in Atlanta, Georgia. Same house show as the Nikita Koloff, or I'm sorry, no, it was the previous Omni show from the Nikita Koloff Ric Flair match we watched on our last Carolina Dreamin' episode. This was an interesting match. I liked this match. I thought it was good. I went 3 stars, but my buddy Simon, if you just he posts a lot on a message board. He's at handworkreviews.com, where he's doing kind of his more long form reviews now. But if you type in Simon watches NWA 1985, you'll go to his message board where he went through all the TV shows. He's a very tough grader. I know some people think I'm a tough grader. Simon, if a match gets 4 stars. I'm probably going 5 stars on it. So he's a very stingy grader. Probably one of the toughest that I know. But this was his number 2 match in all of JCP 1985. I didn't see that at all. And he, me and him do have some dividing opinions on some stuff. Like, he didn't like the Magnum TA Ole Anderson match very much, for example. So we do have some conflicting opinions, but I was surprised to see that. So, you know, maybe more people would take his side on that. For me, I just thought it was a good, solid house show match, 3 stars. And the last match I watched was Arn Anderson and Ole Anderson versus Buzz Sawyer and Terry Taylor. This was from September 7th, 1985. It was on World Championship Wrestling. Very good tag match. Thought Terry Taylor looked good coming into the promotion. He was fresh at that time, coming off of his Mid-South run. Went 3.5 stars, 7.1 out of 10 on that. So all these matches that I talked about today, you should be able to find either on YouTube, in the case of the tag match from Worldwide of Ricky and Robert versus the Russians. Also, I think you'd have to YouTube for the Worldwide Ric Flair, Ole Anderson, and Arn Anderson versus Magnum TA, Manny Fernandez, Dusty Rhodes, Six Man. And probably for that Anderson's versus Magnum and Dusty tag match as well from Atlanta. The other ones should be on the network as well, under the World Championship Wrestling banner. So you should be able to easily find all the stuff we did today. Great series of matches. Jim Crockett Promotions is on a roll, headed into 1986, which is an amazing year. We'll see what 1987 holds. I think it's a year maligned by some, but I think a lot of that is due to Lex Luger joining the Horsemen and Ron Garvin winning the world championship. I love both of those guys, so I may be higher than consensus on that year, but we'll go through it. There's a lot of matches to watch for that year, a lot of interesting stuff to get to. So for this episode, this puts a bow on 1985. Like I said at the top of the next episode of Carolina Dreamin' number 6, I will talk about the 1986 matches you need to watch, and then we will dive into 1987. So for Chad Campbell, everybody be safe out there. Everyone love each other. Let's come together as one. Let's just be a family. Come on. Let's get it together. This is Chad Campbell, signing off.